Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
And until you make a decision, things don't happen, right? So it's almost like there's so many paths we can go on. And if we're stuck and just trying to figure out which way to go and overanalyze everything, you're almost like, you know, we're basically stuck in this quantum field of like, you know, it hasn't happened until you decide, okay, well, this is the way I'm going to go. And you actually go for it.
And take action, right?
Exactly. Take action.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Radu Aboric. Ken, we just got finished recording that episode, and it was a good one.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. You know, we always talk about, hey, when we want to achieve something, we find someone that's done it, and then we ask them how they got there and how they did it, and that's exactly what we did on this episode. So Radu is a full-time successful e-commerce seller. And he shared with us, you know, before, after, how he did it, and lots of gems in there. It's a really, really good episode.
Absolutely. A couple of things that we went deep on. One was financing a quickly growing business. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that, because if you are growing an e-commerce business, you're going to run into a cash crunch. And we really go deep here. Radu talks about how he funded some of his growth. Ken and I talk about how we funded our growth, and some really good conversation there. And another thing that really stood out to me was how much Radu talked about mindset and how important that is. And so that is sprinkled in throughout the episode, but it is an excellent interview and a case study in somebody that fired the man recently and is doing e-commerce full time. So this is an episode you're definitely not going to want to miss.
You know, I'm currently a full-time entrepreneur. I funded or started two e-commerce brands. First one I started about 3.5 years ago. I was still working full-time at the time for a software company. I was a software support engineer. It was more like a side gig, just something that I was, you know, wanted to do on the side after we moved from New Jersey to Florida. It was just kind of a slow start because I wasn't necessarily spending too much time and effort on it. I was just slowly wanted to kind of see, you know, where it may go. But at some point, it kind of gained critical mass and it just kind of took off. And it got to a point where it's just becoming too much for me to handle, just, you know, between a full-time job and, you know, family with two kids. And, you know, this fast growing e-commerce business. So I took the kind of the plunge and I finally fired the man, as you guys say, I went full time. And this was April of 2019. So about 15 months ago, about the same time, I started a second brand with a friend of mine that has been doing great as well. We kind of have the same issues with it now that we have with the other brand. We're like, we're just running out of stock. We can't keep stock. And the other brand is seasonal, so it's more, you know, like the warmer months. So right now it's just the peak, and it's like the sales are like, we're actually baffled by how well it sells. Like we've turned out down PPC, you know, and everything, because just we have so much, so little stock left, and it's just like it keeps going up. It's just kind of insane, which is good, but we need to prepare, I guess, for the next season and make sure we're ready when it hits. But you know, those are obviously good things. To kind of get off the tangent. I'm doing full-time e-commerce right now with the primary brand. We are now in multiple marketplaces. So we're in US, Canada, 5 marketplaces in Europe, and recently went into Australia. So trying to diversify, also trying to kind of get away from Amazon. I mean, not away, but essentially diversify off Amazon and use other channels that we have more control over, Shopify and, you know, eBay, and then looking into going to wholesale. So there's a lot of kind of moving parts.
Very nice. I'd like to dive into the very beginning when you decided to start your first e-commerce brand. What prompted that?
So I'm not sure if there was like a single event. It was just more like a chain of things that kind of led to it. Back in the day, like I would say maybe 15, 20 years ago, I kind of dabbled in e-commerce when eBay was just coming up. So I would did some like online arbitrage, and like I would find deals and stuff and I would buy them and then resell them on eBay. I made some minor cash, nothing major. I kind of always wanted to see if I can take it further, but for whatever reason, you know, I didn't. Maybe I kept looking for things that may not work or finding excuses, you know, or just being too busy or not wanting to commit to it. And at the same time, Amazon was starting to come on the, you know, the market, as far as like the marketplace and being able to sell on it. So I thought about it, like, it's kind of a cool idea, right? To be able to sell there and maybe almost like hands-off type of approach where they handle everything for you. It seemed like it's a lot more scalable than what I was trying to do for eBay because, you know, it's a lot of work with setting up each listings and you know, shipping all those orders. It's just like it wasn't scalable, at least for my liking. It required a lot of my time, you know, and then the return, I guess, was linear. And it was based on how much time and effort I put in. To where Amazon kind of like looked like, well, you know, if you can get it right, and you can set up things initially, then it then kind of takes off, and with a lot less effort, you can get some great results. I've tried something maybe like 5-6 years ago where I was looking to create some products that I can sell. My wife gave me an idea, well, what if we maybe try to sell some kids like home shoes, I guess, like shoes that she will not flip-flops, but like, you know, shoes that she would wear at home. Some people actually do that. So I found a factory overseas, kind of got the first small order. It never really went anywhere. I mean, we sold some on eBay, but it didn't go as well as we planned, but at least I kind of planted the seed. So, you know, in a way, it was like a gradual transition. And then in 2016, we decided to move to Florida. I was lucky to keep my job, so I was working remote at the time, and then my wife could not keep her, so basically she was stay-at-home mom. And I was looking into ways to add additional income just to kind of compensate for her not having her job anymore. Me and a friend of mine looked at different options. We stumbled upon some videos on YouTube about selling on Amazon, kind of started sharing those videos. And then I discovered one of Greg Mercer's case studies, I think like the first one, the Jungle Sticks. So it was actually cool because it went through the whole process and it made it look fairly simple and doable. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, this looks like it could be a good idea. It doesn't require a lot of investment. I can probably do it while I'm still working full time. So I followed those steps, researched products, found the product. Was almost ready to pull the plug. Then we took a trip at the time, like went back to New Jersey to see family, and then kind of took me, I guess, off track. I came back. I started like doubting. Well, started looking for things that, you know, why this would not work. There's a few other players that came on market. There's, you know, pricing and this and that. And what if this? And so I almost, I think at that point, gave up on this product. I was kind of looking at new ideas. And at that time, I went to a Amazon meetup locally, and then we all shared our stories basically. And then everybody kind of pitched in and offered advice. So I shared mine. I told them like where I stand, that, you know, I'm about to pull the plug. I found the plug, but I'm not sure about it anymore. And I probably got some of the best advice from the organizer. He's like, just do it. Don't overthink it. Just start. Even if you fail, you'll learn something, you'll adjust. But the point is to not get caught up in your head, essentially. So I did that, went home, I basically placed the order. And, you know, a lot happened since then. But obviously, if you're looking back, it's, you know, in the 3 years, the change has been like just basically it's a complete, you know, 180 or like just a, you know, a brand new life or different world, essentially.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really inspiring there. And you're glad you took that first step, right?
Absolutely, man. That's what typically holds us back. And I, you know, like even looking back now, like, you know, me and my friend that we kind of started on this together, he never really took that. I mean, he kind of dabbled in it, but I don't think he ever committed fully to it. And maybe he waited a bit too long. And, you know, he actually tried. He did have a couple products he brought to market, but I think he brought them kind of too late. And, you know, issues came up that he never really, you know, like it, I guess took him off track as well. So he kind of gave up. He's still thinking about maybe going back in, but it's I think it's always a battle in our heads with any change, especially. And this is, you know, this is obviously a big change. Because we all used to kind of things to be the way they are, you know, we're in a comfort zone and it's harder to get out of it. Your brain will do anything to kind of put you back into what's, you know, known and what's basically what's safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So Red, do this. That's perfect. So taking you back to April 2019, you said you went from full-time employment to switch to full-time working on your business. If you can go back to that time, what was your biggest fear that was kind of holding you back from going full-time?
I mean, obviously doubts, right? You always have doubts. And just kind of like what I mentioned just before that, it's, you know, like your brain kind of doesn't like you to venture out into the unknown. It's just the mechanism that nature built, you know, to keep us safe, right? But it also, it hinders a lot of potential in us. And so obviously doubts were like the, you know, the main issue that held me back. And it's like, I wanted to make sure obviously that I don't just kind of do it recklessly, that, you know, this step is calculated. And then I also needed to know that, you know, I have a safety net, right? So obviously I have my skill set that I've built up until I went full time e-commerce. I worked for a software company, and you know, I had a great position there. And I knew that you know, even if something drastic happens and I have to go back, there is this safety net for me. So that helped me kind of take that leap. Also, you know, by talking with some friends and colleagues in the space that took that leap before me, and kind of getting their advice and kind of their, you know, they kind of pushed me to, okay, well, it's time to do it. So I probably waited maybe 6 months too long. I could have done it a little bit earlier. I wanted to do it, you know, so it's like, you got to find a balance, right? Like, you don't want to do it too early, because I've heard those stories that people just kind of, you know, jump into it before they're actually ready, and then they realize there is just not enough to, you know, sustain their lifestyle, whatever it is. So they have to kind of go back. But also the other, you know, the other side of the coin, where people just kind of waiting for too long, and it's just getting, you know, overworked, overwhelmed, and at that point they're neither focusing all their attention on the business to grow it, nor I guess their full time job. So. And I was kind of like in this space probably the last 6 months of you know, before I went full time. But, you know, obviously the numbers were there. You know, I mean, there was enough revenue, profit coming in that, you know, I could actually take some money. I guess another reason that I waited longer is that business was growing so fast, and we kind of always had cash flow issues, which I'm sure you guys know. It's really hard to sustain, you know, an e-commerce business at the rate that it could grow through Amazon and other channels, just on the returns that you get from previous orders, right? So, you know, that trajectory is just too sharp, you know, for you to be able to fund it organically. So I had to kind of go in and take some loans. I'm glad that I did, because that helped us 10x the business at some point. But also, I needed to know that there is enough cash flow returns coming in that I can actually take a part of it just to kind of sustain, you know, basically my livelihood, right? So be able to pay for what we have and cover the lost salary from me quitting my job while still having funds in the business to sustain the growth. So those are kind of like the key things that I was thinking about it. And at some point, I guess when I felt that there is a good balance between all those factors and with some, obviously some help from some friends, finally said, okay, I got to do it. And I did it.
Radu, you mentioned something that I want to dive into, and that was you had a safety net, and that was the skill set that you had built up. And the reason that I want to dive into that is a lot of times when people talk about a safety net, they are thinking of, say, 6 months of expenses in a bank account. And I think that's a really good point. And can you go into that a little more and how your skill sets helped you feel more comfortable with firing the man?
Yeah, I mean, and it kind of goes back to probably just working on mindset, which was a big part of this journey for me. A lot of the fears and the doubts are maybe not as realistic as we think they are, right? But as far as safety, like, yes, it's just, I guess, in your head, being able to rationalize any change. And the safety net, obviously, so one is you trying to rationalize like what your fears are. At the same time, you have to realize that if something is to, you know, happen, which could, you can always have a plan B, right? And for me, that plan B, that kind of allowed me to, okay, take that leap, like have to know that I have this, maybe this parachute, you know, and jump off that cliff. For me, that parachute was my skill set. I mean, you know, I had a pretty good job. I had, you know, been there for a while. And I knew that worse comes to worse, right? If this doesn't work out, I could always, you know, use my skill set and go back and you know, get my job or at least something in the industry or something in the same field and survive, right? And still be able to provide for my family. That was one of the biggest fears that was holding me back from taking this leap of faith.
So Radu, so you mentioned that your biggest fear was providing for your family, right?
Yes,
so,
of course.
And then some of the ways that you overcame that fear were mindset. You surrounded yourself with like-minded people that were supportive, and you leveraged your previous skill set of your job to know that, hey, that's my safety net. If I need it, it's there. But you just took out all the other barriers and plowed forward. Is that a kind of a good sum?
Yes. Essentially, once I kind of felt comfortable enough, right, I learned to push through some of the resistance, then that helped me move forward. And a lot of factors played into it, but yes.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you said you probably waited 6 months too long. You know, you could have went full time 6 months earlier. Now, if you could go back to that point in time, is there any advice that you would give yourself back then, now, what you know now?
So at that point, I mean, I would say just decide or choose a path. And this was one of the issues that I was struggling with, or things that I was fighting, you know, in my own headspace, is just kind of making a decision and choosing a path. Because we, you know, I was tend to like overthink, well, what if this, what if that, instead of just kind of almost like trusting the, you know, the path, or trusting yourself and just taking those steps. So, you know, if I would go back and talk to myself at that time, I would just say, you know, be more decisive, right? Just choose the path, just go for it. It doesn't guarantee you success all the time, but as long as you have the right attitude, the right mindset, you will get out of any issues. And it's always a learning experience. And I think, and it's kind of like this, almost like going into, you know, like the quantum realm, right? But unless, kind of until you make a decision, things don't happen, right? So it's almost like there's so many paths we can go on. And if we're stuck and just trying to figure out which way to go and overanalyze everything, you're almost like, you know, we're basically stuck in this quantum field of like, you know, it hasn't happened until you decide, okay, well, this is what, the way I'm going to go, and you actually go for it.
And take action, right?
Exactly. Take action.
Radu, another thing I want to dive into is you had talked about growing your business before taking money out of it. And I think that's a really good point that a lot of people getting into this may not understand. And I just got done reading Ryan Daniel Moran's book, Zero to a Million in 12 Months. Great book, by the way. The number that he says is, you know, get your revenue to $1 million before you start taking money out. And I think I've heard that target be different according to who you talk about. But what would be your general advice there? And kind of the second piece of this is you had mentioned that you were glad that you took on debt. Can you go into that a little more?
Yes. So the numbers, so I guess $1 million, yes, I would say it's a good number to have. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, a milestone, right? But it depends on your comfort level, and it also depends on your profit. But essentially, yes, I would say $1 million would be a good number to shoot for. And this is kind of like where we were at the time when I went full time, around that $1 million mark. It also, obviously, you can probably have to look more at the profitability of the business and how much actual profit you're making, because that can vary greatly depending on a lot of different factors. And it also depends on your lifestyle and maybe like your pre-e-commerce, you know, revenue or salary, whatever you're living on. And you know, see how that compares to how much money you're getting or you could be getting from the business without hindering its growth too much. So there's obviously aspects to this that are different for, you know, each person. Like somebody that's single, maybe, you know, young, and they could actually live on a lot less than maybe somebody that's has a family, kids, mortgage, you know, tuitions, whatever else comes with it. And those things are obviously very important. So you don't want to risk or have, you know, your risk adversity is different depending on where you are in your journey. So yeah, you have to weigh those things individually based on your situation. But I would say, you know, shooting for the million mark would be a good general target. And then once you're there, looking at your finances and figure out, you know, how much you can actually survive on, I would say, because you probably don't need as much as you were making at your full-time job to at least keep you afloat for 6-12 months. You can cut some costs and still, you know, live fairly comfortably without, let's say, the full-time job, with being able to take maybe a smaller paycheck from your business. So you keep fueling the growth with the money that's left in the business. And getting to the second part of your question is getting some financing really helped us kind of take us over the, you know, like to change the trajectory drastically. So to give you a bit of a story, in 2018, I went to my first e-commerce event. It was Seller Summit of 2018. And it was a great event for me. You know, like I get to meet a lot of people that are like kind of in my shoes, right? A lot of like-minded individuals. Great conversations, a lot of feedback, a lot of advice from, you know, from those attendees based on, you know, my story and like my struggles. So up until then, the main problem for me was keeping in stock, because when I first started, I wasn't necessarily committed or didn't go too big on it. It was more like just a trial basis. So I put a small investment in, And I was trying to grow the business just by selling whatever we had in stock, making, you know, more money and then buying more stock. But it just wasn't sustainable in Amazon world, like between the time it took to, you know, make the products and ship them here because they're coming from overseas, it took like at least a month to get them to Amazon. And then once in Amazon, by the time, you know, it took to sell through, it would be easily, you know, 4, 5, 6 months before you get everything back. And then, you know, you'd had to make at least a few more orders in that time span, and each order had to get like double the previous order, right? So it's just there was no way I could sustain that organically. But I found out, or I realized it kind of late in the game. So it was like a year, just over a year since I started, and I kept feeling bad, like, you know, listen, this is going great, you know, obviously the product sells, there's potential, but like we keep running out of stock, and then once we get back, like a month or two later, you have to kind of start fresh. Like you lose all the momentum, you have to push hard on PPC, push hard on rebates and like sales, try to get it back where you were. So in the process, you lose a lot of your cash flow that you made from the previous order because you were trying to market it again, or like, you know, trying to like pump that flywheel, right? Or prime the pump. So at the seller summit, based on all the advice I got and like, you know, from the speakers and attendees, I had to make that decision. Like, you know what? I have to figure out what I really need to be ready for the fourth quarter. So I ran the numbers roughly. I got a figure, like how much I actually need to order. It was like, at that time, it was a crazy amount. Like it was like $80,000. I think I had to basically order worth of goods to make sure that we can basically survive through the fourth quarter. So like, you know, October, November, December. So, you know, I got the number. Okay, well, it was a huge number. It was scary. I'm like, well, I'm going to get that much money. And then I started looking into options. Luckily, at the event, there was a company called Sellers Funding, I think. And they do like short-term kind of loans for Amazon sellers. And it was expensive compared to other financing options, but it was easy to get. So all they had to do is just they basically plug into your Amazon account, look at the data, and they tell you, okay, we can give you so much money, right? So it didn't require a lot of paperwork or, you know, lengthy process of approval. It took like 2-3 days once I allowed them into the Amazon account. They came back, gave us the first proposal. I got the money, placed, you know, those big orders. And then over time, you know, like other options became available to us, like Amazon at some point reached out and said, okay, you can now use Amazon funding. So initially I was going between those two. And then later through our freight forwarder, we got another inventory financing option. So Flexport is who we use, and they open up this new division. So basically they would finance your inventory once it gets on board, based on the commercial invoice, and they'll give you, let's say, 50% of the commercial invoice as a loan. They'll pay directly to the factory, and then you have like 3 months to pay it back at a pretty reasonable rate, better than what Amazon was offering. So essentially for us, it was almost like a net 90 term, because we had 90 days to pay the money back. So that also helped us with the you know, with that growth. But we've always had cash flow issues, because it's just, even with, you know, with the financing, it's just like it was growing too fast for us to be able to effectively fuel it. And it was a constant struggle to figure out, okay, well, where to get the money next, either to, you know, to pay this supplier, or like to pay this loan payment or whatever. So it's kind of like juggling between credit cards and like, you know, Amazon lending and this and that. And we did survive. At some point I had to kind of slow the growth a little bit, just so there's this balance between having cash flow and being able to keep paying for the new orders and keeping in stock. I had to curb the growth by limiting the number of new SKUs we're bringing to market, because that also was one of the things that helped us grow fast. It was just we kept adding more and more products. But yeah, just finding this balance is was one of the challenges for us, and you know, we're still trying to find the best balance between the two.
That story sounds so familiar. I know Ken and I have run into that where you have a rapidly growing business and your number one problem is cash flow. And from an outsider looking in, that may not make sense. But, you know, one thing that Ken and I have talked about recently, I want to share with our listeners, is when you are looking for access to capital, there's a lot of different options. And Radu, you've mentioned several different options. You may ask yourself, what's the best option? And one way to make an apples to apples comparison is find the APR, annual percentage rate, and put them side by side. And that is something that must be disclosed in any lending agreement. And there are a lot of kind of sketchy ways to present a lending opportunity where they'll talk about it's only 2% compounded monthly. There are items where it's compounded daily. And so that is something that if you're wondering what's best or if something sounds too good to be true, find the APR. And that's the best way to go about it. And I'll personally say I'm using a business line of credit through Bank of Montreal. So Radu, I've got no affiliation with them. But that has been, I think APR is like right around 6 or 7%. And so if you're making a 25% margin, I will borrow all day long at that rate. And so that may be something to look into, but we couldn't talk about this topic without me mentioning that, because I've been in that spot where I didn't know what the best option was.
That's a great point. I'm actually glad that you mentioned it, because yes, a lot of like short-term lending options will try to mask the higher APR that really is behind it by saying, okay, well, you know, you pay an upfront discount fee or whatever it is of 8% or, but if you actually run the numbers, then it comes. So like even the, you know, the first option that I've used, seller's funding, I think the first loan had like a 8% discount, which you pay at the front. And it was like you paid back, I think in 6 months or something. So I just use a simple calculator for, you know, APR loan. I just put in the numbers and it came to about 30% APR, which was high, obviously. But at the time, there was no really other good options for me. So we basically took what we could to be able to still sell and be able to still be in stock. But as the business grows and evolves and becomes more successful, new opportunities and options will open to you. So my point is, yes, definitely know your numbers, right? Even when you compare different options, they may not have the same structure. So if you just basically look at it as an APR payment, you can say, okay, well, this one is costing me 15%, this one is 25%, this one is 8%, and right there you can figure out which one is the best option for you. But my other point is, like, don't hinder your growth just because you think something is too expensive. So yes, the first loan was expensive for us. We still made money on it, and it helped us grow the business as a whole. And then over time, we just kind of find new financing options, refinance higher cost ones. So you can do a quick math, like, let's see, you know, whatever your margins are and whatever you're spending to get the capital for that inventory. And I would say initially when you're short for cash, only use loans to finance your inventory. Don't use loans for like marketing and other, you know, ads. Those should be coming from your revenue or profits. But inventory is your basically main lifeline, right? That's what basically keeps your business running. So, and you know that you're going to sell it, you're going to get your money back. So for, you know, for those, it's okay to start with higher or more expensive financing options, as long as the numbers make sense, as long as whatever you're spending on that inventory is still well below your margin and you're still going to have profit.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we move on to this next question that I'm excited to ask, I wanted to kind of recap everything we just discussed here, because I think it's really important. So Radu, you mentioned you weren't you weren't able to successfully scale by bootstrapping, you know, taking the money you get back in, your profits, buying more inventory. So the growth was so explosive that bootstrapping was not an option. Or if it was, you're leaving money on the table. You're missing out on opportunity. So you took on loans, you know, you went out and got capital, and that gave you that 10x growth. Now, for personal experience, I've used some of the lenders that you were talking about, and I've experienced other lenders that have kind of what I would say is dishonest business practices. And you know, David and I have discussed this in our own businesses, and David showed me, you know, hey, this is how you calculate the APR and find out what the actual number is. And through that process, I've learned to go out and find cheaper capital. So, you know, my advice to the listeners would be, as you're growing and scaling, make sure you're really drilling into whatever is the cheapest capital you can get at that time. Because if you're a young business, you might not be able to go to a bank and get a loan until you have that, you know, that whatever is 12 months, 24 months of history in business, you might not get that loan, but keep trying and find the cheapest capital you can get to fund the growth in your business. Because the cheaper capital you have access to, that's more money for inventory, which is the way to scale anyway. Now that you're a full-time entrepreneur, can you describe like a typical day in the life in March of 2019 versus a typical day in the life of March 2020 for you? What's changed? What were you doing before? What are you doing now? Is it better or worse?
So there's a few things I want to touch on that, but yes, initially, like the last maybe 6 months leading to me making the decision to go full time were very stressful. It was just like, it was just too much. I was juggling too many things, and kind of the stress was getting to me. You know, the business kept growing. It's just like, there was so many things that I was being, you know, so many directions I was being pulled towards, and it just like mentally, like I felt exhausting and like almost at the brink of a burnout. So it's funny because like once I made the decision, which was like a few weeks, I guess, before I actually quit the job. So before I gave my notice, I felt such a sense of relief. So I was on a call with you know, one of my friends that kind of guided me, helped me through the process. And I was kind of saying that, you know, I wanna quit, but I'm have these doubts. And he actually went full time a few months before that, so he really convinced me. Okay, just do it. And at that point, I made the decision. Okay, I'm gonna go full time. I haven't called my boss yet, but I'm like, okay, you know what? This is done. I'm going home. I'm writing this email, and I'm giving him the 2 weeks notice. And at the point when I made that decision, it's just I felt such a relief. Like before I even quit job, just like by deciding, okay, this is, you know, I'm going to go do it. And then afterwards, so, you know, I give my notice, obviously, in 2 weeks, I quit my job, I start full time. It took a while to kind of get into the groove to figure out, okay, what do I do now? Because obviously, your whole process changes now. So you don't have to sort of go back and forth between doing your job and trying to do these things, and then finding time in between to work on the business. Now we kind of almost like felt like there's too much time, but it was very short lived. So I would say within maybe a month, that time got filled in very quickly. And it's funny how it works. I guess we find things to fill our time with. So if it's not one thing, it's something else. It wasn't necessarily like where I was thinking like, well, I have a lot of extra time now that, you know, that I'm full time. But yeah, I found things to do. I got busy kind of quickly after that as well. I do try now to limit my time that I spend on it, just to basically keep my sanity and to be able to spend time with my family and do things that I enjoy doing. And this was one of the main reasons that I kind of went this direction that I decided to basically become an entrepreneur. So I would say I work less hours now, but a lot more intense. So like I'm really focusing on the time that I'm working. And I also have to set boundaries for myself just to avoid being overstressed and burnout. So as an example, I would not look at my phone or do any work before 9 a.m. And I would also not do anything after 10 p.m. Sometimes I, you know, things come up and I slip through, but I try to kind of keep those goals. And also, usually I try to devote at least 3 hours a day to my family. It's like between 5 p.m. till 8 p.m. or 6 to 9. It's like family time. I put my phone away and I just don't even look at anything, any notifications. I just try to be present, you know, with my family, my kids, and also try to take, you know, vacations or time off when I can, even though it's hard because you always kind of feel like you have to be involved in everything. But yeah, I mean, the difference between March 31st and April 31st, I mean, no, April 30th or whatever the date is, was mostly the feeling of kind of freedom and being your own boss, and not necessarily having to rely on somebody else for your livelihood or for the success of, or for your success, I should say. But the time did feel quickly. So in the end, it's just the feeling that you get by being your own boss. I'm sure you guys know how that feels, and it's awesome. It's like a month after that, I couldn't imagine having to go back anymore, even though it was just a month, right? Like once you taste it, like, wow, I can actually make my own schedule. I can decide, or if I have a day that I'm just not feeling well, I can say, you know what, I'm going to take a day off today and just recharge. But you have that power. You have to talk to your boss, or, you know, dread the conversation as well, or calling in saying that you're sick or whatever other excuse you may, or you had to do in the past when you were working for the man.
Yeah, let's get into the lightning round. So these are the same questions we ask every guest. Our first question is, what is your favorite book?
Well, there's a lot of books that I like and I read. I've been reading a lot more in the last probably 2 years than my previous life, I guess I should say. That's one way I kind of keep, you know, fueling my drive and my mindset and my skill set in a way. I think it's mostly mindset that it helps me just kind of keep focused. But a lot of great books that I read, I typically listen to them, like audiobooks. But one that's probably helped me the most with my business and my journey is a book called Clockwork by Mike Michalowicz. It's the same person that wrote Profit First. And it really helped me understand how to build the business to give me the freedom that I actually wanted out of it, right? So it teaches you how to make things more efficient, how to delegate, how to figure out what's important and what's not. Just figure out like the important stuff and kind of, and what's fluff or what's basically tasks that you do maybe just to feel that you're working, they're not being productive. Like almost like getting your 80 to 20 or figuring out what's your 20 and focusing on that. So for me, that was a kind of a big eye opener. And I followed a lot of the advice in that book. And at that time, I made some big, I guess, personal leaps. Like, you know, I hired my first VA, and then a few months later, I quit my job. And then a few months later, I took a 4 weeks vacation to see how the business will do without me. It's just like, you know, all those things that before I was just too scared to even think about it. I just keep pushing them back. Well, someday I'll do it, right? So for, you know, e-commerce, if you're struggling with, you know, like if you're a solopreneur and you feel overwhelmed and you kind of don't know how to structure your business to almost like run itself or run a lot more efficiently and in a way get away from it, from being involved in it 24/7, I would recommend reading that book. It's an awesome book. And then maybe another mention on the kind of like the just the book that maybe not e-commerce related, but I loved it. I loved the kind of like the messaging, and it's the book called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. He's an ex-SEAL, and he like basically smashed like a whole bunch of different world records. And, you know, he was a SEAL. He was some special forces, I think, in Air Force. And, you know, he basically ran the Ironman marathons and did a whole bunch of like world records. And what I loved about that book is basically it shows you how powerful your mind is. Like, this is a guy that basically came from, like, things were, like, so against him. Like, he was basically, and he was on this kind of path of destruction, and, like, a lot of people can relate to those struggles. But through sheer willpower, he was able to achieve those, like, almost unhuman, you know, achievements. And, you know, I love the book just because it shows you how much potential a human mind has.
I was introduced to David Goggins from the Joe Rogan podcast, and he is an incredibly inspirational person. And the thing that I really like about him is that he has been, so he has the world pull-up record, or did at one point, and runs these ultra marathons. Yeah. And some people may look at that and say, well, you're naturally athletic. However, David has been over 300 pounds twice in his life, and he's just a normal guy. I remember in that book, he tells a story about spraying for cockroaches, and he just said, the hell with this, I'm changing my life. And from that day forward, lost weight, enlisted in the military, had issues. Just such a good book. I'm glad that you mentioned that one.
Yeah, it's an amazing book for sure.
Awesome. So our last question from the lightning round is, what do you think sets apart successful e-commerce entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
So simple answer is mindset. And that, you know, it came out a lot through this conversation. I really feel that's what separates people that, you know, are able to kind of take that, you know, step or overcome those obstacles. And I was actually kind of the same way. Like, I mean, probably before, like 3-4 years ago, I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur or like a businessman. I kind of thought that I wouldn't be a good, you know, like business person, because I had all this, you know, all this limiting beliefs, as they call them, like, you know, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that, you know, like, and, you know, I had a pretty good career, and I kind of thought that this is going to be my path, right? And then at some point, I started kind of like reading some books on mindset and self-development, and that's lit the fire and kind of opened up my eyes to, you know, how to look at things differently, like change my perspective on life. So kind of to go back to your question is, I believe that it's mainly mindset and basically work on yourself and pushing against the resistance that we all feel, right? Pushing against those fears and facing them and still making those steps and moving forward in spite of, you know, the doubt and the fear and the resistance. Definitely. That's the key, I think.
That's an awesome answer. That's an awesome answer. Well, Radu, thank you so much for joining us on Firing the Man podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you, and hope to have you on the show again.
Hey guys, it was a real pleasure. I look forward to, you know, speaking and chatting some more in the future.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to today's Firing the Man podcast. If you like this episode, head on over to firingtheman.com and check out our resource library for exclusive Firing the Man discounts on popular e-commerce subscription services. That is firingtheman.com/resource. You can also find a comprehensive library of over 50 books that Ken and I have read in the last few years that have made a meaningful impact on our business. For that, head on over to www.firingtheman.com/library. Lastly, check us out on social media at Firing the Man and on YouTube at Firing the Man for exclusive content. This is David Schomer
and Ken Wilson.
We're out. Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, FTM400.com and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?